everyone. Welcome to Superstar Wednesday. This is Authors on the Air, and I'm your host, Pam Stack. Today is a huge, huge day for me and my colleagues here on the network. Rarely do I have the opportunity to speak to people who I consider national heroes. My first guest, Don Mann, is a, I don't want to say retired because I don't think he ever retired from military service, but used to be a member of SEAL Team 6. He's done a lot of different things. We're going to learn about that. And also his co-writer and a very special man unto his own, Ralph Pizzullo, is with me. Their new book that they co-wrote is called SEAL Team 6, Hunt for the Viper. It is my honor and my pleasure to welcome both Don and Ralph to the show. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome to Authors on the Air. Don? Well,
thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Hi, Ralph. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Don, as we were saying in the green room, thank you so much for your service to the country. I know that you continue to be very involved with our military, both in training and as advisor to the government, but you also have such an amazing bio. The things that you've done, I can't go through the list because it's pages and pages long. But one thing that it really struck me when I was reading your bio was this one particular paragraph, and if you don't mind me repeating it, it says, Don Mann, former Navy SEAL, Team 6 Commando, renowned world-class adventure competitor, and New York Times best-selling author, presents a compelling and extremely motivating presentation that has inspired business leaders and professionals from all walks of life. You've taken your service in the military, in the Navy, and turned this into a way of life for yourself and so many others. How did you decide that's what you wanted to do?
Well, Pam, you know, I really didn't have a plan to do that, actually. When I retired from the military, which I loved every second of it, I got out at the 21-year mark instead of going for 30 years because I wanted time where I was still young enough to go out and do other things. So I went to work for the government, and I also, parallel career was my career in sports and extreme sports. And then I was training a lot of folks who wanted to be SEALs and training a lot of people who wanted to do adventure races. And I started coming up with this talk to motivate people. And then I had some, actually, there were business vice presidents from Daimler Chrysler, and they went to one of my SEAL training events, and they asked me if I'd come talk to their executives at Daimler Chrysler. And I said, there is no way I can talk to business folks. But now, all these years later, I've done about 500 of these talks, and I'm doing one next week in Pittsburgh, and I'm doing one this week in Miami, which is where I am now. And I just wholeheartedly believe in the message that set your goals really high, make that a macro goal, and set up a series of micro goals in order to reach that macro goal. And when you set that macro goal, don't worry about how high it is, because every macro goal I use as an example, I never thought in a million years I'd ever reach that, but a series of small micro goals does get you there. And I just believe in the message, and I'll give it to anybody who wants to hear it, and I enjoy doing that.
Well, first of all, are you originally from New England someplace, Don?
I am, yes. I was born in Connecticut, and I lived throughout most of the New England states, Rhode Island and Maine and New Hampshire.
I can hear the accent. My folks are from Massachusetts. Second of all, I'm so glad you're in Miami because that's my hometown and birthplace. I wish I was there to meet you in person. It would have been an honor. And and you went to Florida State. So you have, you know, hey, we're connected, Don. There's 6 degrees of separation between us. Ralph, you know, I was looking at your bio, and you've been on the other side of where Don was, it seems. And you were in the thick of it as a reporter, as a journalist, as a filmmaker. You've done a lot of different things in your young life. How did you and Don meet, first of all?
I think it was around 8 years ago. Is that right, Don?
Yeah, right around there, yeah.
Yeah, 8 years ago, I got an email from Don saying that he had, you know, he had been a member of SEAL Team 6, had a lot of very interesting experiences in the military that he couldn't write about as nonfiction, but, you know, might be good material for thrillers. And, you know, we got together, we spoke on the phone, and you know, he right away, you know, it was he's an amazing guy with all kinds of stories, lots of insight, and I said, you know, yes, let's work together, let's see how we can work this out. And he was very, very open with me about what he's been through, the good things and the bad things, the challenges, the disappointments, and we've had a great collaboration and friendship. We've produced 7 fiction books, thriller series, in a thriller series so far, and 2 nonfiction books. So, and had some New York Times bestsellers.
Wow.
And
you
know, it's been a great. You know, Don is a friend, and he's a very inspiring figure in my life.
You're kind of inspirational yourself. It was my understanding that your dad was in the State Department in Foreign Service, so he was a diplomat.
That's correct, yes.
And you
yes.
traveled
yes.
quite a bit, not only through Central and South America, but in Asia. And you were witness to quite a few military events, coup d'etats and terrorist attacks. You have such
yeah.
a fascinating life, and you've done all kinds of journalism. Plus, you've been involved in movies and writing movies and a little bit of everything. And when I look at your Amazon page, you've not only written with Don, you've written stories about spies and military. That
yes.
seems to be your niche there. You seem to really enjoy that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Same with Don. You know, I never planned it this way. I was always interested in being a writer and having, you know, grown up overseas and having witnessed, you know, so many extraordinary things. I was, for example, I was a kid and living in Vietnam during the war. My father, as you mentioned, was a member of the Foreign Service. And he liked to go to difficult assignments because, for one reason, it was good for his career. And he always wanted his family with him, even when we were in, you know, very dangerous places, which was scary at the time and, you know, hard on my mother. But for me, being the kind of person that I am, it was just like an incredibly rewarding experience.
What an education.
Yeah, incredible education, both culturally and also in terms of understanding what our public servants in this country go through. That, you know, people don't see, they don't understand, they don't appreciate. And, you know, my father worked with people in the military, with people in the CIA and other intelligence services, FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw how they lived. I understood their lives. And then in 2005, I think it was, I got an email from somebody in the intelligence community who said that he had been looking for somebody to collaborate with, and, you know, would I be interested? And he turned out to be his name was Gary Bernson. And he turned out to be the gentleman who, the CIA officer, who was sent into Afghanistan right after 9/11, ended up helping to overthrow the Taliban, and had bin Laden trapped in Tora Bora. And so I wrote that book called Jawbreaker with him. It became a big bestseller. And since after that, what happened was I started being approached by a number of people in CIA, FBI, military, who were extraordinary individuals with stories to tell, and like Don. And it's been my pleasure and honor, you know, to work with these people and tell their stories, and I continue to do that. So.
And do them well, from everything I've read.
Thank you, Don.
You both said something really interesting to me. You said that it's not what you plan to do. Isn't that an interesting thing? I'm a physical therapist by profession. You can't get further away from that to a radio talk show host. So I think that's a fate intervening, don't you, Don?
You know, Pam, I actually, my feeling is when, and I'm not just saying this because Ralph's on the phone with us here, but when I knew... Actually, for the Hunt series books, I had this idea, actually inspired by Forrest Gump, where there's this fictional character, and he was in this 20-year history span, ranging from, you know, Nixon, Johnson, Kennedy, the Vietnam War,
yes.
His girlfriend Jenny dying from the virus, which was later
right.
called AIDS. But he was a fictional character, and I was at work one day just thinking about that movie and how wouldn't it be great to have another fictional character and bring him through 20 years of history? And maybe not exact history, because you don't always have the permission to do that, but you can
sure.
have a fictional character going through what could be history, if, for instance, in Syria, Iraq, or all these war-torn places. So when I first met Ralph and I first heard of Ralph, to me, I picture that it was a godsend. You know, first and foremost, we're good friends, and that I appreciate a great deal. But the amount of experience and the expertise Ralph has and the way he does that the research, it's methodical. And I have never heard of anybody, never mind meeting anybody, who can do what Ralph does better than Ralph. And so,
thank you.
Such an accident bumping into Ralph, but it's been such a great accident. It's been going on 8 years. And I love working with Ralph, and so that's why it wasn't planned, because I would have never planned meeting
right.
or bumping into a person like Ralph.
So it was meant to be kind of love at first sight for you two. The bromance is great and strong, so I appreciate that. Don, SEAL Team 6 really became well known because of Osama bin Laden and his capture. And I think before then, people just thought of it as this mythical group of Navy warriors. And I do say warriors very intentionally. How did that change the SEAL teams when everybody started to recognize what an elite intelligence group you were?
Well, you know, just before SEAL Team 6 was created by Dick Marcinko, Richard Marcinko, Colonel Beckwith created Delta Force in the Army. And that,
right.
like SEAL Team 6, which is our sister company, basically another Tier 1 unit, they kept everything very, very close held and secret. You know, it came out a little bit what they did in Panama, but for the most part, they were a very, very secretive organization, and that's how we started out as well. And that went on, you know, 80s, mid-80s. It got up a little bit of publicity once you got to the later 80s, early 90s. But it was kind of, I see it as a two-edged sword. Captain Phillips, the Osama bin Laden raid, the hostages rescued from Somalia. There was some big, big, high-value targets recovered. There was a lot of publicity, and internally it caused a lot of turmoil in SEAL Team 6, because now all of a sudden we're thinking this thing is not supposed to be out. When President Obama came out and said what happened with the Osama bin Laden being taken out, and then when those reports came out, and it was quickly after that SEAL Team 6 was revealed, There was a lot of press on SEAL Team 6, and everybody wanted to know more. And before you know it, the book started coming out, and unlike Delta Force, maybe with the exception of Black Hawk Down, Delta Force, we got in the limelight and pretty much have stayed there ever since. And you're exactly right. I mean, when we got the green light for Osama bin Laden, there were other units that could have done that off as successful. But SEAL Team 6, a maritime counter-terrorist unit, gets a landlocked target in Abbottabad, and they got the target. The Army and Delta was very, very upset. But SEAL Team 6 got it because a lot of the publicity up to that point and the reputation was growing. So in that sense, I think it helped. Internally, it was a terrible thing because, for instance, Rob O'Neill, who pulled the trigger and killed Osama bin Laden, he's got a target on his head now. And every SEAL who lives in Virginia or Coronado, it's easy to find out where they live. It's easy to know where they live. And I believe now, from that statement made on television that it was SEAL Team 6 who took up bin Laden, now I believe most SEALs and their families have targets on the head. So there's been good and bad. They're getting a lot of targets now because of it, and that's what SEALs want, and that's what the Navy wants. But it's got its downside as well.
Do you think a lot of that is a product of media, which seems to insert itself everywhere and for longer than it should be?
Yes, absolutely. The media has been all, as soon as they find out anybody who had any connection with that team, the media is really on them, especially after a significant operation has been, you know, let through the news and media.
Well, Ralph, now, no, I'm not, I don't want to offend you because I know you're a journalist, but I think that you're a different kind of a journalist. You're not a guy who's a talking head on a television loop that plays every 15 minutes. It certainly is not your style. You're more of an expose type of a journalist. What is your feeling about the peeling away of our military operatives who really function and need to function in relative secrecy?
I think it's a big problem. I think that, you know, the primary, I would say, what's of most primary importance is that everybody in the country have respect for, you know, people who are trying to do their jobs, which is their job is to protect us, to protect our way of life. And I think, you know, I understand journalism. I've been a journalist myself. I said, but at the same point, you know, you have to have some human regard for other people. You have to understand, you know, what their lives are like, what the challenges that they face, and also you have to have respect for, you know, the needs of our country. And so, yes, there's a sort of an inherent conflict because we are in an open society where people want and should be privy to as much information as possible so that they can make good decisions and informed decisions. But at the same time, people have to respect the fact that there are certain things that can't be revealed. And and I think, you know, that's an area that, you know, hasn't had enough debate in our society. And people need
you
to talk about. And you know, it's very difficult. You know, Don and I and with all the people that I collaborate with, you know, we're always careful to have everything approved by the, whether it's the CIA or the FBI. So you know, look, you can reveal a lot. There's a tremendous amount of information that these books reveal that, you know, people can learn from. But at the same time, you know, there are certain things that would put other people's lives in jeopardy, the way Don mentioned. So, you know, when you start naming actual members of SEAL Team 6, which I've seen people do in news articles, you know, it's not fair. I mean, these are public servants. They're not in it for the money. They make tremendous sacrifices in terms of their personal lives, in terms of their security. You know, what's the point of exposing them further? There's nothing
I
to be gained by that.
So, I agree. I want to talk now about SEAL Team 6, Hunt for the Viper. This is your 8th hunt book. Don, are you the idea guy, like the outline? Let me give you the overall picture of the story I want to tell. And Ralph, are you the fill-in-the-blanks type guy? Or Don, how does this collaboration work?
Well, I'd like to start answering that by adding something that we just talked about just a minute ago, and it's going to help. And Ralph was showing the sensitivities that we all have in the military and the government and all. And what Ralph and I, what we are very, very purposeful, mindful of, is we do not really tactics, techniques, procedures, or names, or places, or actual operations that took place. So what we do is we pick the hot spots in the country, in the world, and something like this could happen here. There's a good chance it will happen here, or something similar to it happened. So with that in mind, we use that as one of our criteria for books. When Ralph and I had our first talk, it was, you know, Ralph, what my basic thought was, and we went back and forth and shared our ideas, was I'd like to come up with a fictional character. I would like the character's teammates, the actual SEALs that I've worked with, but we don't reveal their names.
Right.
But they're just guys I really, really had a great deal of respect for, and Ralph did an incredible job on humanizing them in the books. And also that what is happening in the world today? Let's make it very, very relevant to what's happening in the world today. And it's amazing. Sometimes we'll have finished a book and now it's in the news. It's almost like we're almost sometimes a step ahead before these things happen in the news. But really, my contribution has been the basic idea. We go back and forth with the editing a little bit as far as, you know, is this militarily tactically sound without giving away tactics, techniques, procedures. But
right.
The great, great vast amount of research and detail is Ralph, and that is a skill I don't have, and Ralph has it in abundance. So we'll decide on a country, we'll decide on, you know, who's going to be there, what the characters are, and then go back and forth. But it's really, the success is really Ralph's attention to detail and meticulous research and what he puts into it.
Well, I want to remind listeners, too, we are talking about fiction. Many, many other fiction books, you know, you may get an inspiration from something that's happened in real life, but don't assume that fiction is anything but fiction. Don't assume
that's
names
right.
are
mm-hmm.
exactly what
yeah.
they are. So Ralph, I'm assuming that you guys have a pretty good story outline before you tackle what's going on, whether it's written or whether it's something you got, like a story Bible that you discuss, you know, how often do you contact Don in the actual writing process?
Usually what we do is come up with an outline, a short outline, like a synopsis, maybe three or four pages.
The overview.
Because that's really required by the publisher so that they know, you know, what the books are going to be. Uh-huh. And you know, and then, you know, Don looks at it. We go over it together. And, you know, Don is usually very enthusiastic, has some suggestions. And then, you know, I basically, you know, write the book. I contact Don, especially in terms of, like, you know, would the SEALs do this? What kind of, you know, weapon would you use? What kind of helicopter? You know, a lot of, you know, kind of technical questions, but sort of the overall, you know, most of the writing is I do, and then, you know, I send it to Don, and Don goes over it, and he has his comments and suggestions, and, you know, I incorporate those, and, you know, we go from there. One of the things that has been a huge advantage is that, you know, because of my background and the other books that I've written, I have a whole network of friends in the military, private military contractors who, by the way, now do most of the fighting in a lot of the wars, and people in the FBI, intelligence community. So, you know, I have a lot of, they give me a lot of insight in terms of what's going on in the world, who the big enemies are these days, who the targets are. And in terms of Hunt the Viper, I actually had friends who were, you know, fighting in Syria against ISIS, most of whom were private military contractors, who I could talk to via Skype, and, you know, they would tell me about, you know, what the groups were, what the tactics were. So, you know, that's a huge resource.
I bet it is. Don,
yeah.
Give us a little synopsis about the book, Don.
Well, every book is slightly different than the other. And so depending on what we decide we want to do, for the Hunt the Viper, it's an ISIS, basically based around an ISIS general, and it's in Aleppo, Syria. A lot of the mission takes place there. And the team guys are going in. When I say team guys, that's another part that's somewhat fictional. We created a fictitious unit called Black Cell, which is pretty much the cream of the crop of SEAL Team 6, and they have a little secret cell that's from the same chain of command as SEAL Team 6, but they're off doing these special missions here. So it's SEAL Team 6. They're going against the Assad government, going against the Russians, and they're working. Croc is the team leader. He's based very loosely on my life. I kid around when people ask me, is he based on your life? I said, the only difference between me and Thomas Crocker is his life is 1,000 times more exciting than mine ever was. But anyways,
so, you know, somehow, Don, I have to call you on that, because reading your bio, I want to call, you know, on that. I just don't believe it.
Don is a very modest guy.
Life.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an amazing life.
yeah. Thanks, but and Thomas Crocker always has a way of ending up with a beautiful female, and that's what happens here. And he meets a woman, and they're just in Syria, and they're working in a small town in a town in there. And you see the battles along the way. You see what the guys are facing in their own personal lives, which makes it very, very real, and the hardships that they have back at home with their kids and their families. And that's what this is about, and that's what the other books are about as well. A lot of them are, and Ralph says, you know, he has a lot of contacts that tell him what the tactics are, and he's talking of the enemy, and that you don't get
interesting
from anybody else that I've ever heard of. So this one here, unlike the others, this one here, we picked Syria. And it's kind of funny because Hunt the Viper and all the others, Hunt the Dragon and Hunt the Jack and Hunt the Falcon, it all started because our first book, our first fictional book, I'm sorry, nonfiction book, was called Hunt the Wolf. And that was based on the wolf is the bad guy, the sheep are the good guys, and the sheepdogs are the ones who go after the bad guys. So we had a little excerpt in there about Hunt the Wolf. Let's go after the wolf. It's something we use in law enforcement and military. And our publisher said, I like that. And I'll come up with another animal. So Ralph will come up with these other animals to represent the leader of the gang or the terrorist organization we're going after. And so that's pretty much what happened here. And basically Hunt the Viper was
story.
A rescue mission.
It is a spectacular story because it is so timely with the horrors that are happening in Syria now, and, you know, and have been going on, obviously. And I, again, I want to remind everyone this is a work of fiction, but you sure could pick up this book and take a look at pictures of war-torn Syria and see it actually happening. I want to take just a moment to let listeners know on this very special occasion, if you'd like to say hello and thank you to Don Mann, or hello to and thank you for his magnificent reporting, Taraf Pazullo, you may call in right now at 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. The phone lines will be open only for about 5 or 10 more minutes. You know, Ralph, you have just kind of gotten yourself involved in so many different things. You've written both fiction and nonfiction books. You wrote your first book about the role your father played in the fall of Somoza. And being from Miami, that was really a very big moment because we had such a huge Central American population there. I can remember being in this downtown club called Tobacco Road, and a lot of the people that were involved in Nicaragua at the time used to hang out there. And, you know, the joke was Sandinista, as you can imagine, you know, are you a Sandinista? You know, what's going on? But that was remarkable. And then you went, you talked about Aristide from Haiti. Again, my friends in the Haitian community there, you know, he was first thought to be a savior for the island turned out obviously not to be. And he was the guy who was a religious man at we thought at first. And then you went on and you started writing mysteries and literary fiction and did radio drama and poetry. You've done lots of things too. You were a copy editor and a bartender. I love that. I swear to God, we are related in some former life. I did that as well. you've done a lot of these really fantastic things, even as far as film and so on. Is there one thing out of all the things you've done, Ralph, that you still want to do?
Oh, wow, there's a lot of things I'd like to do. I just love, I love stories. I love telling stories, and I love, communicating with people in an emotional, personal way. And I hope the books that I write and the other things that I write can do that. And, you know, as a writer, you try, you're constantly trying to improve. You're constantly trying to communicate better, clearer, more directly to people. And so it's just, I love doing it, and I love being able to, communicate to people and reveal things to people that they're, I do speak a lot, to various groups, and, so many people are interested in these kinds of stories that have to do with foreign affairs, with how we get into other countries and cultures that we sort of don't quite understand and think that we're going to help and end up, because we don't know the culture and the people, we end up getting ourselves in a mess. It's just a, fascinating world, and the whole war on terror especially is absolutely interesting, and so many people have been affected and their families have been affected.
Yes.
And there's a lot there.
It's
a lot
going
there.
On
and
in
I think
world.
We're all trying to learn from it, and I'm just trying to add to that. Yeah.
I want to make a mention of the awards and the grants that you've received, among others. You've received the Douglas Dillon Award for Plunging into Haiti, the Audie Award for the Chopin Manuscript, Center for International Theater Festival for Best Play, the Kesselring Committee Award for Best Play, National Endowment for Humanities Grant, the Mellon Foundation Grant, Peabody Award nomination, Jerome Foundation Playwriting Fellowships, Writers Guild East Fellowship Award, New York Independent Film Festival Best Screenplay, Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati Best Play, Beverly Hills Best Play, Rocky Mountain. You even did some work, I believe I read someplace, you did some work with one of my favorite people of all time, Jeffrey Deaver. So you've done an awful a lot of fun things, you know. In the other hand, you know, Don, you're no slouch either. I as I say, I tried to go through all the things that you've done. Forget trying to go through your television, radio, and print entries. It's impossible. It'll never happen. You are the founder of Frogman Charities. You're the CEO of Battle Frog Obstacle Race. You're a trainer for Vancouver Canucks, which I love that. You're the director of Primal Quest Expedition Adventure Race, the founder and director of Odyssey Adventure Racing, producer and director of Expedition BVI. And it goes on and on and on. You're an inspirational speaker. You've been named the Virginia Beach Ambassador Extraordinaire. Richard Branson selected you as part of his medal quarter for his trans-global balloon voyage when he went around the world, and more. Your military history and all the books that you've written. My God, you've written books and articles for just about everybody. You're endorsed by every athletic and sports company that of any import. You also are a triathlete, a marathoner. You paddle, you swim, you bike, you run. Is there anything you – can you turn water into wine, Don? Can you turn water into wine? Let's take a call, okay? Hold on 1 second. Area code 603, you're live on the air. Who's this?
Hi, Pam.
Hi.
It's Lucy.
Hi, Lucy. How are you?
Oh, I'm peachy.
Good. Say hi to Don, Mann, and Ralph Pizzullo.
Hi.
Hi.
You have a question?
More of a thank you for the service, because you know how close I hold that.
Let me just explain to you that Lucy is the mom of a sailor, and the grandmom of sailor babies. So she's a military mom, and so this was real important for her to call in. Go right ahead, Lucy.
You have the hardest job in the military, being a mom.
That's
and a grandmom of people in the military. That's the hardest job there is.
My son often asks me if I have a GPS tattooed to his ass. I always know where he is. He doesn't know how I do it.
Wow.
How do you know where I am? Because I'm a mom.
Yeah, you have the intuition.
But no, I just wanted to say thank you, and I'm glad that you do include the families, because as hard a work as you guys do and did and all of that, it's tough, but it is tough being somebody. So when my son would be deployed, it would be, you wouldn't hear from him for months and months and months. And, you know, by the time he's been in 16 years now, and now it's to the point where, you know, I know I'll hear from him when he gets back. And that's not always easy on a lot of parents, especially when they're new or wives.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Go ahead.
You. But Lucy, you have it rougher in so many ways because your son, anybody in your family who's in the military, when they leave home and they go to deployments, work is hard and everything like that is hard, but they're with another family at that point, and they're with the people that they want to be with, and they're with the people they want to serve with. And for them, they're leaving behind the family they love to go to another family. And sometimes they're with that family much, much more than their, you know, bloodline family. So, but for you, you're left and they leave home and you've got this void in your life. And sometimes that is just much, much harder for those who are back at home waiting for the men to come back or the women to come back home.
Yep. I had 3 kids to fill the void, so.
And grandbabies.
Yeah, you're right.
And grandbabies.
Yeah. And grandbabies.
I'm so glad you called in to say hi to Don and Ralph. We're almost out of time. You got in under the wire. That makes me happy because I know this is an important show for you. You and I will talk again soon, my friend Lucy. Take care of yourself.
Yes, we will.
And hugs to those grands, okay?
All right. Thanks, sweetie. Thank you, guys.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Colin.
Gentlemen, final thoughts. Ralph, I'll give you the first shot at it. What do you want
well,
to tell
I
people?
Well, I think, yeah, taking off from Lucy, I just think that, you know, this is a whole area that these issues that we cover in our books, Don and I cover in our books, you know, these stories, they affect everybody in our country. I think the media a lot of times doesn't understand, you know, how many families and family members are involved and, you know, in this whole struggle and how much, the level of dedication that people like Don and other members of the military, intelligence community, FBI, the dedication that they put into it that preserves the freedom of our country is a lot of times ignored and needs to be appreciated
I agree
more deeply.
With you 100%. I agree. Don, your final thoughts?
I guess my final thought might be a lot of Americans, especially now in these days here, they're so tired of the news, the reporting, the negative publicity on everything that happens overseas, and they kind of turn a blind eye to what's really happening. And one of the things I feel very good about working with Ralph with these books is we're coming up with a product where you can pick it up, you can be entertained, but at the same time, and most importantly, you're learning what our men and women are doing overseas and how they're serving our country. And forget about the news and forget about all that, but the reality is these young men and women are over there doing things similar to what us and others are writing about. And it could be done in an entertaining way, but still to get the knowledge and to get the insight of what's going on overseas when they leave home.
You know, if you make an interesting point about that, Don, it's you said young men and women, and the fact of the matter is I think people forget that 18-year-olds are going into battle. It's not someone who's going to be a career military officer. That's an 18-year-old who's really not allowed to drink in every state. So that's saying something. Well, gentlemen, I have to tell you, I can't remember when I've enjoyed a show more and have been so enlightened by both of you. Thank you so much for being my guest today, Don Mann. Formerly an active member of SEAL Team 6. I know you never retire from the teams, so I'm not sure what the quite the right word is, but thank you for your service. Once a SEAL, always a SEAL. And I wish I was in Miami to hear your inspirational speech. I hope one day I'll get a chance to meet you. Do either of you plan on going to Thriller Fest or to VoucherCon this year?
Oh, I've been before. This year I'm not going, but I usually go.
Bummer.
Yeah.
All
probably
right.
Next
well,
year.
I won't be there.
Yeah.
Next year, then I'm going to look forward to meeting you, and hopefully, Don, I'm going to sign up for your newsletter so I can find out where you're speaking if it's ever anywhere in the area. Ralph Pezzullo, I have to tell you that without an honest and free press, we are well and truly screwed. And
yes.
And
yes.
on the same
Absolutely.
By the same token, There is nothing more enriching for people than fiction, and thank you both for writing such great fiction. I wish you, safety, Godspeed, and God bless America. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Rob.
Ma'am, it's been a pleasure.
You're very
welcome. Thanks, Don.
Very much.
All the best.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
That's our show for right now. I'll be back shortly with another fantastic interview. Stay tuned, and thank you, Mom and Dad.